Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, it's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
740, for those of you old enough to remember 2007, 8, 9, and a little bit of 10, Jason DeSanto was a regular guest on the afternoon show. And then he joined a boy band for a while, and he wasn't able to do it, but he's back, and it's nice to see you. How are you?
It's great to be here. Famous fleeting boy band can only last for so long, and here I am.
I'm just glad that all our counseling worked out, and we were able to put this back together. Senior lecturer at Northwestern University for Law. By the way, sorry about the basketball game yesterday.
So close.
A really good game.
I actually haven't seen that last sequence of plays yet.
They were up by three. Let me, Kevin, jump in if I'm wrong on this, but they were up by three with less than a minute to go.
Then Michigan hit a three-pointer to tie it, and then after that, Northwestern just couldn't get anything going offensively. But there was some controversy late. There was a blatant travel the officials missed that would have given Northwestern the ball back. They didn't call it.
That's because the Michigan Wolverines are huge cheaters.
They're cheaters, and they yes. paid off the officials.
Yes, that's what we just wanted to say. Jason has appeared as a First Amendment expert on national radio. You see him on Chicago Tonight all the time. He does birthday parties and bar mitzvahs. And tell me, the kids you're working with at Northwestern now, what's the main thrust of teaching for you?
Steve, it's really long communication. So a lot of that is public advocacy, trying to make lawyers better in the public sphere, public arena, and also some First Amendment stuff, too.
You've studied speech giving, speech making, speech writing, debate presentation, things of that nature for a long time. Why does it feel like we've had more debates than ever?
Because they've been repeating themselves.
Actually less than 2012.
Yeah, that's right. It is actually less, but they've been a little more vitriolic, more candidates on stage for a longer period of time, fewer candidates dropping out earlier in the cycle. And the dynamic between these two, between all of these folks, have gotten used to each other, and not in a good way. So I think that's why it feels like it's gone on for a long time.
How does it, I want to get to the Republicans from last night, but let me start with the Democrats for a second. How does it help Hillary Clinton to smack Bruce Rauner around? Because regardless how you feel about the governor, there's a lot of voters in the middle who may well be on the side of, look, how's this not the Democrats' fault in any way? How's this not Madigan's fault in any way? Who have a little more intimate knowledge of the state. It doesn't seem like she was prepared very well to go as hard as she did after Rauner yesterday in a state she really has to have.
Well, you have to remember, though, in a Democratic primary, she feels like she has locked down more moderate Democrats, even more right-leaning Democrats.
Do you think that's true? I mean, after what Bernie did in Michigan, because I don't know the answer to that. I think she's clearly the winner here, but I think it's dangerous.
He did better among higher income Democrats in Michigan than he had any place else.
Yeah.
Those making over $100,000. But I think if you're doing a calculation, if you're her and you're doing a calculation, you know that where you want to drive your turnout is in more left leaning areas, particularly areas that have been hit hardest by the budget impasse in Illinois. So I think it's actually shrewd politics.
Oh, you thought it was good then?
Yeah.
What about Bernie? What do you make of Bernie? And Bernie's like, who's Glenn Close in Fatal Attraction? Suddenly he sits up in the tub and he's got a knife. He killed your bunny once, Hillary. He'll do it again. he just won't go away in her world.
Yeah, my head's still spinning with that analogy, so I'm going to have to just kind of take a second and think about it.
You know, picture Bernie in the tub. All right, now stop.
Right. He has become a better candidate. He has been a candidate of conviction all the way along, and that has been, to the extent he has a brand, that integrity is his brand, but he's also very savvy. He's become a better debater. We're going to talk about debates. He's just become a better, tighter debater. He presents himself better in that situation, and I think he has a good sense for how to attack her weaknesses. And campaigns, and particularly debates, are all about contrast. He's very good at identifying contrast, driving the contrast, and then getting back to how that contrast illustrates that he's really the candidate who's the candidate of conviction and the candidate of the times.
Jason, got to ask you, you're talking about debates. People I know are tired of the mudslinging. When they say Rubio needs to go on the offensive, which he has, I think that now is more that has hurt him somewhat. Do you see the candidates? Do you see a need for attacking? I mean, do you think people are just tired of hearing all the attacks?
I think people say that they're tired of attacks, but I, I think that it is good to know what distinguishes candidates from each other. And so when we think about putting somebody into a debate setting, you're trying to get them to drive their message. And that means not only their own positive message about themselves, but actually to the point I was making a minute ago about Bernie Sanders, how his message contrasts with Hillary and fits with what people are thinking at home. Sometimes you can only do that by contrasting the position you've taken with the position somebody else has taken. What people do tire of is talking about the size of somebody's hands and related appendages. That becomes old after a while. And so, for example, if you show people a series of negative ads, people are generally going to say, we don't like negative advertising. But most of the research indicates that contrast ads actually work. They work to change people's opinions, and then you reach a saturation point where people are just tired of all of them. So
I don't like the contrast ads because I was saying to Steve yesterday, they'll be attacking whoever it is, and I don't even know who the person running is. They're saying, you know, candidate X is terrible, and he's done this, and he's done this, and he's done this, and I don't even know who's running the ad.
To.
Yeah, who they're referring to.
A lot of that super PAC stuff, right?
Exactly.
So let's do traffic here, but we come back. How big a deal is consistency is the question I'd like you to take on here, because everybody goes, look, because Bernie has been consistent. He's been consistent in his message. Hillary's been consistent in her message on the Republican side. I think Cruz has been consistent, frightening, and Kasich has been consistent. Trump gets points for consistency when I think he's been he's fluctuated the entire time, and he's ready to flip and flop. So how is he getting over? That's what I'd like you to answer for me, and that way my head won't explode. It's 7:46. Mary, what do you have in your traffic trouble spots? Monday, it's my surprise birthday show. So nobody will be more surprised than me. And some of you may be saying, oh, God, another birthday where you're just going to make a huge spectacle of yourself and it's just going to be all a bunch of birthday wall to wall. Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
But
yeah,
we do have some surprises you don't know about.
Oh, is that right?
No. Because you hate surprises.
Aren't we supposed to bump it back a week? So the 21st, isn't that the normal trend of the show?
It is a normal trend of the show, but we have a staff change coming up next week, so we need to actually do it on the day.
Gotcha.
By the way, that staff changes, Kevin. You're gone. You're out.
Gone from the radio station?
I swear I thought it was me.
It's a good run, guys. It's been
he
fun
looked
working
at me
with
when
you.
He said, I swear I thought it was me.
Yeah. Kevin will be in Arizona next week. Kevin's going to be covering spring training. So that'll be good. We'll hear from Kevin in Arizona all next
week. Check in every morning. Should be fun.
And we'll get back to more Stevie Awards here in just a little bit. Who do we thank for the early birthday cake?
That would be Pete Fasano.
Ah, yeah, he's the best.
Pies by Fasano. They're delicious. You can get them at Mariano's and all your favorite grocery stores. But today he dropped off a special cake. He made a cake for Steve for his
big old chocolate
birthday.
Cake.
Yeah, thank you to Pete. Piesbyfasano.com. Check them out. They're phenomenal.
What's on the cake?
A picture of me.
And you didn't think you could get your head on a cake.
Oh, it's a big cake. Yeah. And usually we'll take the food that we have from the morning show, whatever it is, and we put it out in the kitchen upstairs on the 7th floor. And this is what happens. Gah! Gah! As people come in and start attacking.
Oh, we've got pizza coming today. That's exciting.
Yes. Oh, pizza and cake.
Oh,
pizza and
man.
Cake. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Nice healthy
right.
Friday.
Great day. It's a prelude to Steve's birthday.
Right.
It's going to be like a... Like wetting the palate.
I'm telling you, as of Tuesday, I got to get started training for Rio or I'm never going to be ready.
Keep some leftovers because I haven't scheduled anything for Monday yet. So,
lobster rolls.
Put it in the fridge.
Dean Richards coming up, Hawkopedia coming up, more Stevie Awards, and Sacha Baron Cohen, I think, unless I cancel the interview 5 minutes before he's scheduled. The more I learn about this movie, the more disturbed I am that I'm going to talk to him. Jason DeSanto's here. Jason, what are the age range of the kids you're teaching? Are they grad students or regular kids?
Those are law students. Yeah. So they're most of them have been out for a couple of years, had some other work, and then they've come back to get their law degree. So that's them, and then there's some on the Evanston campus. We have an executive communication program there, and those folks are mid-career, and they come back for a master's in communication.
What do you find for the 18 to 25-year-old sector in regards to optimism about their future now compared to, you know, 7, 8 years ago when you and I would talk?
It's better. It's better. When we were having those conversations, yeah. We were right in the midst of the Great Recession and the fallout from that. And there were trailing consequences from that. we had all the disaster, and then slowly over time, more and more of the consequences would become clear. Offers that had been given to people would be pulled before they could even start work. You hear much less of that now. So there's more optimism than there was during that time.
You talked about the consistency of Bernie's message. The inconsistencies of Trump don't seem to stick in any way, shape, or form. He basically has said, look, I might change on the whole crazy immigration thing.
Size of the wall.
You know, anybody, I believe he wrote it up this way. Any leader who's not willing to adjust his views isn't a very good leader. This would be the same guy that says, what was it? What was the grammatical trap he fell into the other day? Oh, Islam hates us.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, Islam hates. So in other words, anything Donald Trump is saying could be changed at a moment's notice. Why is he not getting dinged for that?
Well, you put your finger on it right there with the last thing you said, the comment about Islam hates us. He is consistent and he is viewed consistently on an emotional and visceral level. The people who like Trump feel like they can trust Trump because he channels and seems to embody their anger, their rage, their anxiety that's been percolating for the past few years. We talk about some people feeling more optimistic about the future, a lot of the people that I deal with every single day, but that's not most people.
Yeah, that's true.
And because of that, he represents that. And so, logically, what he says often doesn't make sense. There are positions that will change, but emotionally, viscerally, he's captured that. And trust is mostly about whether somebody feels like you're strong enough to embody what they believe in and have just enough likability where they feel like they can relate to you. And he embodies that. And actually, if you watched the debate last night, there was an interesting distinction between he and Cruz where he and Cruz would both talk about how angry they were about a situation, but Cruz kept trying to pivot to the solutions. Anger isn't enough. And Cruz said that on several issues, including tariffs. He said you can't just say China bad, things like Islam bad. You need solutions. And he started at the beginning and all the way to the end trying to distinguish himself from Trump on the solution part of the equation.
Did he cut through?
No, not really. Probably moved a few votes, but probably not that many, and not from Trump is my sense, because persuasion is about you have to persuade people of a problem and of a solution, and Trump has locked down the idea that he understands the problem. And because of that, he has credibility with people, even if logically speaking,
That's the part that frightens me the most, because
yeah.
Because I understanding the problem, even if you believe he understands the problem, I can look at a fire in a house and go, well, look, it's on fire. I understand the problem. What am I going to do to put the fire out? Am I going to call the fire department? Am I going to give them the proper address?
Are you going to build a flame retardant wall?
That's the part that's most frightening about this movement to me is it's all emotion and it's nothing practical.
Yeah, and actually there's an echo of it on the other side, a very different kind of version of it. But if you think of persuasion as being the same thing, you have to persuade somebody there's a problem, you have to persuade somebody there's a solution. On the Democratic side, Bernie has locked down a lot of the, here's the problem, I understand the problem, it's an economy that's left you behind. Hillary's the one who keeps saying, yes, but I'm a progressive who can, what, get things done. She's on the solution side. And so you have these two poles. And really, there hasn't been one candidate yet on either side who's been able to hold and lock down both of those successfully.
All elections are polarizing, but do you find this the most polarizing, where people are literally saying, all right, I don't even know who I'm going to vote for at this point?
I think I hear more, see more, and to some extent myself even feel a little bit more. I'm not sure I have a good sense of what's actually happening from day to day. There's kind of this rolling sense of mystification of, and I think Steve just hit on it, which is, you know, what terrifies him, if I can paraphrase.
No, that's the right word. Yeah.
You're cowering. Is most of this particular movement is built on this kind of emotion. And there's a little bit of curiosity about that, if not just being baffled, because it seems out of the norm. And I feel like there's more of that. And I think that's why there's more discussion about, for example, the party system becoming somewhat untethered, that the alliances that used to form between the parties somewhat uneasily, but more or less naturally by the time conventions would roll around, will be harder to reform this time around. So I do feel like there's more of that. And I feel like that's not so much a function of 2016 as much a function of, I think it's something we've been building to over time. Look, just on the Republican side, this issue of trade that started the Democratic debate the other night, started the Republican debate last night. And now there's all kinds of cross cleavages in the party on that issue. And a few years ago, you would have identified it maybe with Dick Gebhardt on the left. Mm-hmm. 2008, maybe, or 2012, maybe.
Yeah,
Rick
you knew
Santorum.
The players were and where what team they were on.
Yeah, but you started to hear it a little bit with like Rick Santorum in 2012 on the Republican side. But that's been going for a while, and I think now it's starting to hit a full percolation.
This is, and obviously we'll talk more about this on the air as the days and weeks roll on here. But as it stands right now, it certainly looks like it's Trump Hillary. So. Doesn't that mean we unfortunately joke about this every presidential cycle? It's the least worst alternative. It's never been bigger, least and worst than this, because you'll have people who fear Trump versus people who have no trust in Hillary. And to me, the vote then would come down to for maybe the majority of the country, who's going to do the least damage, not who's going to do the most good. What does that say about the shape of the system?
I'll say this, and maybe this cuts against the grain a little bit. It's hard to run for president. And I think if you make it to the finish line on one side or the other, you have run a gauntlet. And that does say something about your resilience, if nothing else. So we might look at the choice that we're presented with and think that it's unpalatable, but it does represent two people who've been willing to put themselves out there and have been strong in doing it. And
hey, Charles Manson's still alive, you know, and he's been in prison for a lot of years. Just surviving doesn't mean you're still not a cockroach.
I am going to go back. I'm going to get that bumper sticker. I'm putting it on my car tonight.
I am legitimately concerned about the future. I know you are as well. You got to laugh, because if you don't laugh, you're going to spend a lot of time crying. I think it's an incredibly poor field of candidates that have made it this far. And we're going to elect somebody. And what we ultimately know is there's a big difference between running and governing. And once you get the job, you still have to deal with a little something called Congress. And we know what a pain in the ass they are. And the Supreme Court. Oh, by the way, they're missing one. There's a lot to be done. I still wonder if sometimes that Donald Trump doesn't wake up in the morning and go, what the hell am I doing? I used to be able to just do The Apprentice.
Yeah. Well, maybe he's surprised he got where he got.
Oh, he's
got to
be. He's got to be. You know, Bernie is.
I don't think so, actually.
You think so? That's interesting.
I don't think he's surprised.
You really don't?
No, I don't.
Well, that's interesting. You don't think it because he feels like this is what he should have done forever?
No, because I feel like he probably, and I don't know, but I think he probably feels like he's been in the right place all this time, and now events have conspired, the situation's got bad enough that everybody sort of sees it the way he sees it. And look, last few years, Tea Party movement, Occupy movement, anxiety, dislocation. Right. That's what he's talking about, and it's something fundamental about the system.
That's frightening, too, if Bernie thinks he's the chosen one. It's my time. Jason DeSanto, where do we follow you on social media?
At Jason DeSanto.
Good job by you.
Thanks. Yeah, I found it. I found it. I got it and just been cultivating it. Yeah.
And you come back and do this again?
Absolutely.
Nice to see you.
Love doing it. Good to see you.